everybody today or now, because you probably already listened to the show that posted earlier today. But today is a very special episode of Comes Out Loud, hence the change of dumbery. I am Jeff.
I'm Damon.
And that makes me Gary.
And today, we would like to spend some time with you to talk about a man who recently passed. A man who's given us laughs, given us cries. One of the greatest people that I know. Unfortunately, he has passed. That is Robin Williams. So, it was weird. Okay, so this is how I found out. So I'm here at work. I got my phone just on the desk. I'm booking away. And then I get an alert, and I take a glance, and it says, actor Robin Williams has died. And I'm like, what? I'm like, and it was like right at the end of my shift or something. I got the notification. Wow. I'm like, What? I'm like, I thought he was going to last forever. So, how about you guys? When did you guys find out?
Gary, you can first.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. I was here at home, and I can't remember. I was doing something. But I had my iPad open, I was on it, and the iPad notifications are at the top, and all my Facebook notifications pop up there. Mm-hmm. So I noticed someone posted Robin Williams dead, ... Like it was a link to like something. And I never really click on that stuff right away because of all the hoax posts that go out. So I was like, mm-hmm. And at first I was kind of like, oh my. And then I was like, not buying it. So, but then, like, within an hour, several other people had posted things. And I was like, and it was strange because I was like, you know what? Like, I wonder what's going on. Like, if there's some validity to this, if Snopes has anything. So I actually logged into Facebook, the web version, and then started scrolling. And I was like, oh, shit. Like, ABC.com, CNN, like, the legitimate news sources, not just, you know, some random blog. Were posting things, and I was like, whoa. Like, and it was funny because it was a little bit of a disbelief kind of suspended reality moment, and I thought, is this really happening? Like, and the thing for me was is that, you know, there was speculation from the very beginning that it was suicide, and I was kind of like, like, that really kind of gave me pause because I was like, so like, for another reference, like Sonny Bono and the ski accident. Do you know what I mean? Or Liam Neeson's wife, I forget her name, the actress who also had she had the brain injury from the fall, I think skiing or something like that. Do you know what I mean? Like, it was one of those things where it's kind of like, really? Like, I was like, suicide seems so, I don't know. Like, it just it seemed out of element to me. But at the same time, I was like, well, I don't know. And then. Reality kind of set in, you know, I mean, there was just more and more stuff about it. And I was like, okay, like this is apparently the real deal. And I just, I don't know, it really kind of, for me, it was different than other celebrities like Michael Jackson or, Elizabeth Taylor. Do you know what I mean? Like these icons of the entertainment industry in different ways. Like, this one just really kind of hit me differently because I was like, you know, he had a career of almost 40 years in entertainment, and that's my life. So this is, like, a person that has always been in my life in some fashion. Do you know what I mean? Like, what about you, Damon? How did you find out?
I was actually at gaming with my Pathfinder group. Kim wasn't there yet, but we were... No, Kim wasn't playing. I don't remember. Anyway, so we're playing a game, and it's once again, it's phone. We all kind of found it from phone and iPad. Mm-hmm. I got the random... we were at a little lull, so I looked at my phone and looked at Facebook and found the random several people starting to mention it, and I was like going, what the hell is going on? So I took a minute because, like you, Gary, I didn't initially believe it because, no offense, Facebook, but people tend to very quickly jump to conclusions about things and report false information without any kind of verification. But, you know, as more and more people started posting things, it kind of was like, okay, this is definitely real to me. And then when I got home, I watched the news and definitely got confirmation that it had happened. I was obviously surprised that it happened. And as you said, it was weird that it happened the way it happened. And as the details have kind of come out about his passing, it's becoming a little bit more like a little bit deeper than what people are originally thinking. And it caught me for a loop. And then Chess posted an article like within the next couple of days after his passing. And that article really made, like, threw some things home for me, like hit home for me, really hard for me. So, because it made sense to me. The article is about how there are several, you know, comedians out there who use their humor as a mask to hide their issues and their depression and their personal, you know, battles. And you never, and other people do that too, and you never really know what they're going through or what a single person is going through. And I just found that to be it hit really close to home. So
yeah, I'm actually very proud of one of my close friends who lives in California. He posted probably the day after the announcement about Robin's passing, and he said, for those of you that aren't aware and like see me like in one aspect or another, what you should know is that I recently was diagnosed with depression and I've been going to therapy for it. And I don't want people to think that this is something you don't know about. Now you do. I thought it was really, you know, bold and courageous of him to kind of come forward with that, because he has the antithesis, the opposite of what people expect. He's very bubbly. He's very outgoing. He has a huge heart. He's very loving. Uh-huh. And I've known that about him since I met him in 99. But he, you know, I thought that was pretty, you know, pretty amazing that he, you know, kind of stepped forward and just owned it. And didn't get into a whole lot of, you know, like, I'm taking medicines, I'm doing this. Like, he just basically said, I'm dealing with it. And now you know. And yeah. So, I commented and I appreciated, you know, that he shared it and stuff like that. And then he reached out to me because we're the type of friends, we don't touch base all the time. So yeah. it might be a long period of time, like actually years. And then we touch base and we talk for 2 hours on the phone like we did this week. And he opened up to me about everything that's been going on and stuff. And it was funny because he was like, it was good to talk. And, you know, I think the thing that people don't recognize or realize is that actually this subject matter probably connects the majority of the advanced world. And what I mean by that is I can't say for certain that countries that do not have as much economic prosperity and luxury, if they have the same struggles with it or not. Uh-huh. I think it's tied to the fact that we don't struggle. Do you know what I mean? Like, because yeah. I have a roof over my head, I have a job, I have food. Do you know what I mean? Like, because I have creature comforts, for lack of a better reference,
yeah,
the mind then takes on other things. Where if I was busy foraging, do you know what I mean? Like, just try to survive, to live off the land, you know. For example, as a cultural or a current calendar reference, if I was in Africa and struggling against Ebola, do you know what I mean? Like, I mean, the whole thing drastically shifts. And I think if you give the brain opportunity to, for lack of a reference, I don't know how else to say it, wander, to think, then other things come into play. That's just, I could be completely off base, but that's just where kind of my thought or viewpoint has been. So, this was really very, very interesting. I read a couple of articles, blog posts this week. The one I liked, I'll go back after the show and look for them and then put them in the notes. The one is about a gentleman that was a friend of Robin Williams, who's a Zen Buddhist monk, and he gave his perspective on it. I found it very profound. The takeaway basically was Robin had an amazing gift, like a gift on a scale that nobody can measure in regards to his imagination, because he could see so many different things and channel that through his artistic talent via impressions, jokes, acting, comedy. But this guy that wrote it actually said that was also his major downfall. And what he meant was his imagination did him in, because he couldn't discern the difference, like as to where reality is and where it isn't. And that's, I thought it was a very profound statement, and I have to agree with it. As a person who at a previous point in my life struggled with depression and suicide, I get it, because for me, in my personal experience, your thought process is in such a different place that you can't think differently, so to speak. And I think that people who haven't had that experience do not understand what that's like. Yeah. So they can't comprehend like how, despite the fact that you're standing literally in front of them holding an orange, they can't see the orange.
Yeah.
I don't know if that quite makes sense to people. Like, that's kind of the way I think of it. Like, just because it's there and it's a reality doesn't mean that they can see the reality. What they can see is what they interpret or what they choose to see. And so at least that's the way I looked at it, the way my experience went. And that's why I temper the times in my life that I have blue moments and I feel depressed about things and the way things are going. I actually remind myself, my biggest life lesson is to turn back and look and say, I will not be in that place again, because I know that had I done then what I thought about doing, I would have missed out on the decades of experience since, and all the friendships and all the good moments and all that kind of stuff. So that's just kind of my perspective. But yeah, that one I thought was very interesting in the post perspective. And then there was Jim Norton, who's a comedian. He wrote a blog. I think it's either on Huffington Post or New York Times, something like that. But he owned it. Like, he flat out said, in the 3 decades that I've been doing comedy, I've known 8 comedians that have committed suicide. He said, it's the thing we don't talk about. And he said, and I think the reason why we don't talk about it is because people sort of don't know how to handle it. And the other thing is, he talks about the theory that comedians, the reason why they're so good at comedy is because they go so far in the other direction as well. So he thinks there's some validity that they use their talent to cover up. It's kind of, for lack of a better reference, it's like, I'm going to use all the wrong words. I'm going to own this now. It's like bipolar manic. Do you know what I mean? Like, they swing from one end completely to the other. So like, they're so far on the negative side that they use the comedy to swing completely the other way.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, I don't know, those just really, they were kind of key for me in this past week of just processing for myself, like what happened and where is it at and that kind of stuff, you know. And I have some of the same questions other people have, you know. He's got a wife, 3 kids, you know, what about the kids? What about the career? And I thought, well, it didn't matter.
Yeah.
Obviously. And we just have to accept it, whether we can understand it.
Yeah. It's hard for, it's always easy to pinpoint a reason for someone, you know, for a lot of other people's deaths, you know. Oh, they had cancer. They had a heart attack. They're old. You know, life is just kind of gone. You know, when someone takes their own life, you never really know the clear reason, you know, unless they left a note or unless they specifically kind of said something to someone. You don't really know. And then with Robin, what we're finding out, yes, he had depression, and that probably contributed to it. And then we find out later this week that he had been diagnosed with Parkinson's, which is a just, you know, it's a disease that eventually degrades the mind, kind of like Alzheimer's and things like that.
Yeah, the revelation towards the end of the week about the Parkinson's piece, like when I first caught the blip of it, probably about 3 days ago, when it very first, at least I saw it, I didn't comment on it, I didn't say anything, because it, like, I saw one reference to it, and like a good 24 hours went by before anything else came up about it. So it was one of those, like, I wonder how accurate this is. But the comment was made that he had been diagnosed, but only the family knew, and he had not publicly come out about it.
Yeah.
And that really hits home, because my father has Parkinson's. And so he's been slowly progressing through the disease. And seeing that, I was like, oh, man. Yeah. And then it was funny, because I was like, I just wonder, like, if that somehow was kind of the, for lack of a better reference, the catalyst. Do you know what I mean? For him mentally, that he was like.
Yeah.
And here's the weird thing is, because then my mind kind of went to the realm of, well, maybe he just was like, nope, not happening.
Mm-hmm.
And, but at the same time, I'm like, yeah, but, like, it's going to sound really strange. I'm like, but being that he's from entertainment, does he not know Michael J. Fox, like, in the Michael J. Fox Foundation and everything they're doing for Parkinson's research? Like, I don't know. Like, I was just so, to me, that muddied the waters even more. But yeah, it's just because of my personal experience.
It's one of those things that's difficult to real, like I said, it's difficult to pinpoint. Like, was it this that made him, or, you know, caused the break and caused him to go down the road he ended up going down, or was it, you know, was it, oh gosh, as a public figure, he's going to have to, at some point, bring it up to people. You know, it's gonna become public knowledge, and was that ultimate fear, you know, was that what did it? You know, it's so hard to say. It's so hard to pinpoint. I wish we had had. I hope we get more information. I know it sounds bad. I think this is a talking point, and people are talking about it, which is the best part about it, is that people are starting to have these conversations about depression. Your friend who came out, you know, and told everyone that he's been dealing with this for a while, and other, you know, that's the one thing I hope kind of happens from this, is that people start realizing that this is a real thing and that this can happen. And it, the best thing you can do for anyone who is dealing with it is to be there and try to talk to them and, keep yourself open to it.
Yeah, I think my hope for the future is that people will kind of process and deal with it and potentially, you know, get some forward momentum and be much more open in talking about and dealing with this. That's what I hope. I don't honestly know what will come out of it.
Yeah.
I'm concerned that this will regretfully turn into what a lot of other things have. Like, you know, there's a lot of shock, and then, you know, you go through the stages of grief, and then you kind of move on. And my concern is that not about, like, thinking about Robin, but just about how I think depression is the thing that connects a good portion, if not the majority of people, but it's like it's like a hidden lurker, and like nobody talks about it. That's my concern, is that, you know, another 5 years from now, we won't have made any progress in dealing with it, talking about it, being open about it, accepting it, and that kind of thing. So.
That's true. But let's remember Robin Williams in what he has done and what he's been giving us, the laughs and cries of his life. One thing I did find out was there was a petition on change.org to have a character put into World of Warcraft.
Huh.
Memorialize him.
Okay.
Actually, there's a link in the Skype chat to it. And apparently within 24 hours, let me actually read part of the thing. It says, "It is with a growing sense of pride of the World of Warcraft community that I declare victory for this petition. In less than 24 hours, we've earned 11,000 signatures, a huge amount of traction on many gaming and new outlets, as well as assurance from Blizzard employees that our desire for a Robin Williams tribute and or NPC will be handled with great care." Apparently, from what it's sounding like, they're going to put a character in the World's End Tavern in Shadrath and Outland. You got to know the game to understand that. Okay. And he's going to be there to tell jokes.
Nice.
So it's a nice little thing to put in a tribute there. And he used to play World of Warcraft. So that's one way of memorializing him.
Is the petition still ongoing?
It's considered done victory because Blizzard's going to do it.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it within 24 hours, they got so many signatures, and Blizzard says, yeah, we'll take care of it. I believe there is a tweet from one of the developer Celestalon regarding he's somebody had linked the petition to him, and he said, yes, we're taking care of it.
Wow.
So it's gonna happen, so that's pretty cool. And I think even Robin named one of his kids Zelda.
He did. His daughter's named Zelda.
Mm-hmm. After the Legend of Zelda. So
yeah, he made reference to her several times, and then was asked a couple of times, not from the gaming community, but during interviews, about the fact that she has that name. And he kind of explains that he didn't directly come up with the name, I believe. I think it was his son, who was also an avid gamer, that really kind of made the suggestion. And then he was like, well, what the hell, you know?
Yeah. That's a good name.
Yeah. That's pretty cool. Yeah, I agree. I thought in today's show, you know, we're doing something we've never done before, to talk about somebody that's passed. But the thing for me is that I noticed as soon as, like, it was pretty much confirmed and everyone was posting about it, the bear community overall, the people that are close to me via the bear community, everybody was affected.
Yeah.
And it's interesting to me because Robin wasn't considered a bear per se. He's notoriously hairy.
Yes.
He talked about it all the time and blah, blah, blah. In some of the movies you got to see, like if he was wearing short sleeve shirts or tank tops or, you know, low necks or whatever, like there was no doubt that the man was hirsute.
He does that a lot in his stand up too.
Yeah. And so I think that was one thing about him that people found attractive. When he did a couple years ago, the Bengal tiger at the Baghdad Zoo, the play in Broadway, he grew a full beard out. And I think that drew some attention to him via the bear community because he had this amazing, like, Ernest Hemingway kind of look about him. And as he, you know, as he aged, I think there was a lot of things. But at the same time, he also never shied away from the gay community overall. Like, mm-hmm. Yes, he made a lot of jokes about the gay community via stereotypes. He also did some amazing roles that the gay community, I don't want to say appreciated, but they didn't take issue with.
The Birdcage.
Right. So, like, the Birdcage is an example of how he played an older gay man who owned a drag club, Mrs. Doubtfire, where he played a straight man that cross-dressed to be a woman so he could be close to his kids. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, which technically that movie doesn't have anything to do with the LGBTQ mm-hmm. community, but in a way it does, because for lack of a better reference, the heterosexual community automatically ties them together. Mm-hmm. So therefore, I guess by proxy, like they're kind of related, but so I think there's just something to be said. Plus he was just incredibly open about everything. And it was funny because I heard somewhere, and I can't remember what it was. Damn it. I wish I paid attention. Someone said that they heard that when he divorced his first wife, there was talk that he was bisexual, and they thought he would come out. And then he married his second wife, and everybody was kind of like, oh, wonder what that's about. Well, and here's my thing is, I don't kind of care. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a time and a place, I guess, that I care about someone carrying a flag or a banner. You know what I mean? And yeah, and we get to rally around them. So, like, yeah, when Greg Louganis came out, everybody was like, woohoo! Like, you know, like, every time that happens, I see the community kind of go through these waves of behavior and maybe emotion. So, like, Anderson Cooper comes out. Like, and it's kind of funny in a way to me, like, you know, Ricky Martin comes out, and I'm using these examples, and it's funny because part of the gay community is like, girl, we've known for years.
Exactly, especially for Ricky Martin.
Right, but then on the other side of it, everybody rallies around, and there's like, woo, like another, like, famous person that helps bring forth the reality that we're just like everybody else, quote unquote.
Yeah.
In a way about Robin, I kind of don't care.
Yeah.
If he was bisexual or not, it doesn't matter to me. He was a sexual person. He jokes about that and stuff. And that's the thing about comedy I think that people find difficult is you can't figure out in the comedy when the jokes are being made if there's reality to the jokes. So, like, right before we recorded the show, Jeff and I are kind of sort of watching and looking for a certain joke that I had in his most recent tour that he did called Weapons of Self-Destruction. And he makes a joke at one point about a finger up the ass. And so you're like, okay, so is he saying that because he's had the experience of being, you know, fingered? Or is he saying that because he lives in the world of comedy, which happens to be blue, and that's just something you would say, whether or not you've actually done it?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And to me, I don't care.
Neither do I.
I don't think of him that way. Like, well, I've never sat and fapped thinking about Robin Williams sexually. I haven't.
And also, you know, just because you're not gay doesn't mean you might not like a little fingering. You know.
True.
So it's not saying one way or another. So, and I actually have a DVD of Robin Williams live on Broadway. I watched that last night. Then I'm like, I want to watch more Robin Williams. And then I pulled up Can I Stream It and found Weapons of Self-Destruction on Amazon Prime.
Nice.
And so I was able to watch that. And so I was doing a little rewatching. Then when I was hearing that show while we were preparing, I'm like, oh yeah, I remember that joke. That's hilarious.
Yeah.
And he goes a mile a minute. It's like,
yeah,
his stand up is constant. It's a constant barrage of stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, he gives pauses, but there's only a few times during his performance where he just, you know, stops and waits for the audience, because he'll have the pause long enough for them to give a couple of laughs out, and then he'll just go into the next joke or continue with that last joke. Or he's doing stuff where he's not necessarily pausing, but more of fuck.
Yeah.
You know, it just kind of like letting him laugh while he's kind of, it's still kind of a pause, but at least he's still doing something, because he just keeps going. And I mean, the fat, he drinks his water really fast. I mean, it's more like sips or something, because he goes and then starts talking as soon as the bottle comes away from his mouth. And I love the way how he uses bottles and bottles of water in his comedy acts.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of bodily fluids represented by that.
Yeah, it's his comedy. And like, one of the things we wanted to do was, you know, what's our favorite quote or joke for him? I don't have one, because it is everything I, at least in regards to his comedy, I love his impersonations, his impressions, his just rapid fire jokes and speaking on reality, you know, the real world, and just kind of going from there and throwing some truth bombs in there. It just, all of it just is amazing to me. So I've been like, I have Pandora at work, and I only really recently started listening to a comedy station. And one of the several of the ones that rotate in are Robin Williams from Weapons of Mass Destruction and a couple of his other things. And I'm like literally trying to stifle a laugh while I'm at my computer because it's just so funny.
Yeah, you can't listen to them at work very well just because the giggles end up coming out.
Yeah.
Right. And since you mentioned that, Damon, I'll jump to in that particular show when he did the tour. There's so many things I've loved about Robin Williams over the years, but I was thinking, like, what is kind of the epitome of him, like his sense of humor? I think most people know him for his manic, like, impressions, like about how he would jump from topic to topic to topic. And they would all seamlessly go together. And that's, I think, the talent, the skill that he had that people were just in awe of. But if you listen to his comedy, like, it's observational. To me, it was very much of the ilk of, like, Bill Cosby and George Carlin. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's pointing out the absurdity of the world, so to speak. Mm-hmm. Louis C.K. is, like, the newest, I think, in kind of that style. Yeah.
Like his in Weapons of Self-Destruction, he says he's basically going over the history from Clinton all the way to Obama.
Right.
And it says, we were attacked. It says, well, did you get bin Laden? No, but we got Hussein. Right, like, and then we elected a black guy. A black guy? No shit.
Yeah. It's funny because he talks about it like in terms of like if somebody went to sleep for like, you know, 10, 12 years and then wakes up and you have to catch him up on all the political stuff. And they're kind of like, wait, what? Like he points out the ridiculousness of like the advances that are not really advances.
Yeah.
You know, like we hired a black man, but, you know, he doesn't outright say it, but like we still have racism. Like it's
Barack Hussein Obama.
Yeah. So from that particular show, I watched it last night. And there was one part that just I could not like it really. And don't get me wrong, like I see a lot of comedy, so I don't find every single joke funny. There are funny, but I don't necessarily laugh out loud. But in this case, this one really kind of set me off. And he talks about how he had heart surgery. He had a bovine valve, a cow heart valve put into his heart. And so he does this whole riff on about animal parts and what it does to you and all this kind of stuff. But then later he talks about – he goes into this whole riff about drugs and medicines. And at one point and we'll have a link to the video on YouTube about the whole show if you want to watch it. But at an hour in to the Weapons of Self-Destruction, he does a joke about Viagra post-heart surgery. And I love it because he talks about the fact like how like it now that he's 50 plus at, you know, at the time when the show was made, you know, how it affects him. And he does this amazing visual piece where he's drinking bottled water, but he keeps using it always in reference to ejaculating during the show, which I think is fucking hysterical.
Yes,
I'm also thinking that the stage manager is having a fucking shit fit because he keeps putting water all over the stage.
They probably already knew he was going to do that.
Yeah, I know, but I like the first time it happened, I was like, "Oh my god, I hope he doesn't slip and fall." Like,
he did that with some of his previous stand-up too. Like again, Robin Williams live on Broadway, he did the same sort of thing. So, yeah, so I think they're used to that with Robin Williams by now.
Yeah, but so the whole joke about the Viagra post heart thing is maybe about 3 minutes long, but he makes references to the fact that like, you know, that he has an erection that, you know, is like he's 25, but the rest of his body doesn't react that way. And so like his brain and his heart are like screwing around with him and he gets a leg cramp and then his heart's like going, fuck you. And then he ends up basically he references shitting himself. And it's funny because it's so manic. And then, you know, the comment from his sexual partner is, are you coming? And he's like, no, I think I'm dying. Like, I mean, it's because of all the bodily functions. It's so funny. Like, and then he says,
"Only enough blood for one." I've been given two brains, but I only have enough blood for one.
Yeah. So I really found it hysterical because he takes what people would probably find in some ways taboo conversation or discussion or reality and just puts it right out there for people to deal with. So anyways, that part really moved me the most about that particular show. It was my favorite kind of joke, so to speak, of recent.
And I'll make sure the link to the Amazon's version is available for everybody right on our website, webzoutloud.com. Good place to visit. Well, let's move on into more of some of our other favorites. Like, what are some of your favorite movies that you've seen him in that you really enjoyed? Like, my favorite just has to be Aladdin as the genie. I mean, he was the perfect voice. And the thing is, I'm sure he did it, although I don't have any absolute proof, but I'm sure he did it, was right at the beginning. You have that narrator guy in the desert. Ah, salam and good evening to you, buddy friends. Please, please come closer. Yeah, welcome to Agrabah. I used to have that full thing memorized and almost choreographed. Combination hookah and coffee maker also makes julienne fries. Do not break. Anyways, so that's probably my favorite of all of his works, but he's done some great dramas as well. The Poet Society, Good Will Hunting. I mean, he's an immensely versatile actor. He was in Kenneth Branagh's version of Hamlet, too, which I also have on DVD. It was more of a bit part, but, Kenneth Branagh just gets a whole bunch of known actors and all the time, so.
Yeah, my favorite all-time Robin Williams film, which is based off of a book. I fell in love with the book first. It's Richard Matheson's What Dreams May Come. It's an amazing piece of work of literature. It talks about, it's a perspective about what happens when you die and where your soul goes, quote unquote, and what happens during that journey. And the basis of the book is about the fact that the main character dies 4 years after both of his children are killed in a car accident, which leaves just his wife. And when his children had died, she went into a facility because she couldn't handle it. And then she came out and it was the two of them without the kids living. And then, you know, like I said, 4 years later, he dies of a car accident. Long story short, she ends up committing suicide and he thinks they'll get reacquainted once he gets adjusted to the afterlife. And then he finds out that they won't. And then so the whole book takes this journey about him trying to find her in the afterlife and save her. Because in the book, the concept is that you go to hell or purgatory because you took your own life. So they made it into a movie. It's visually amazing. At the time, it was like pushing the boundaries of things because his character, Chris, is in a live oil-like painting. You have to see it visually. And Cuba Gooding Jr. is in it. And it's so profound. And it was my favorite, one of my all-time favorite books. And then when the movie came out, I completely fell in love with it. The movie did so. A lot of his dramas, I think, kind of went that way. Like, some hit it out of the park and others people didn't quite understand or get. But that, I think, was part of his magic. Like, he chose subject matter people just were not ready for in some ways or went to places and dealt with things that they weren't sure of. So for me personally, that's it. But I agree, like, there's a lot of other great films that are out there, and I agree what he did with Aladdin was completely amazing. Granted, you know, I think for that, they really hit, that ball into outer orbit because they allowed him to go on to do riffs and that kind of stuff. Just like The Birdcage is another classic movie. One of the things is that Mike Nichols, the director, the first thing he did was he told Nathan Lane and Robin Williams, when we shoot the scene, you shoot it straight to script. No improvising. I want one shot as is, and then we'll just run from there. And because of that, I think we got the magic of not only like the premise of what was going on, but I'm not saying all scenes were cut, do you know what I mean, or shown that were improvised, but I think that's what everyone loves.
Mm-hmm. He was also about the films. You also have to remember, speaking of gay movies, Tu Wong Fu. He was in there as John Jacob Jingleheimer Schmidt.
Yeah.
Oh my God, I forgot about that. That's right.
He was uncredited in that movie, actually.
Although you'd see him and you knew it was him. So yeah. I mean, it's not like he was hiding anything. But yeah, that was also another comedy role. Let's see what's some of the other ones. Oh, Damon, how about you?
One of my favorite movies that Robin Williams did was Mrs. Doubtfire. Mm-hmm. Hilarious movie. It came right before a time for me where my parents actually kind of went through a very similar situation with the divorce and all that stuff. Now, granted, I did not want my dad to come be our nanny in drag and whatnot. That just would have been terrible. But but I the idea and the kind of deeper issues in the movie really hit home, and I really loved that. And the movie in and of itself is just hilarious and fun and funny and poignant is the word that came to mind. But just it was a good movie, and it highlighted some of his a lot of his other, like, his talent and it a really well balanced movie. And a lot of people don't give it a lot of credit, but I honestly thought it was just wonderful, and the story behind it was great. And
I agree. I think the movie was amazing because it hit some really good tender heart points. But at the same time, it reminds me of Tootsie, like at how completely spun things around on its ear. And like one of my favorite, I just saw a clip again and it makes me laugh so hard when the caseworker shows up unexpectedly. And so he buries his face in the meringue of the pie or whatever in the fridge. Right, and he pops up, and then he's making tea, and it's falling into the cups of tea. And he's talking about, oh, you got your cream of sugar all in one, like you have a cappuccino or whatever. I was rolling it up, like, oh my God, that film is so, like, old by time reference, but classic, like, in the humor of that. And there's a part of me that wonders, it's like, I'm wondering how much of that was scripted and how much of that was ad-libbed. The thing about sticking his face in, I get that. But the fact that there was so much on the chin, on the underside, that was just glopping off.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, man, it was great. So, yes, I agree that it's an excellent film.
Other excellent movies. I liked it. Hook.
Yes.
Where he played Peter Pan, Peter Banning, as he's credited as, The Fisher King, Awakenings.
Yeah.
Good Morning, Vietnam. Good Morning, Vietnam!
Exactly.
That's a big one. I'm trying to look through here. Oh, don't forget his role as on Mork and Mindy.
Yeah.
And as Mork and Happy Days. also, he played Popeye, too.
Yes, he did.
And, and then in weapons of self-destruction, he also mentions Bicentennial Man. Makes a joke about that. He was also Flubber, a remake of The Absent-Minded Professor.
Mm-hmm.
Not The Nutty Professor. That's two different things. So he's done a lot of great things. Jack.
Yeah.
I think
that was one of the ones I really loved.
I think he did a pretty good. So I think he's done quite a bit.
Yeah, he took on amazing roles and did things I think that were pretty profound. And so, Damon, what was like one of your favorite memories of Robin?
Oh, goodness gracious. We brought up Hook. I love that movie too, and my favorite part was the ending, near the ending, when Peter Pan is, or well, Robin Hood, Robin Williams as Peter Pan, is with the Lost Boys, and he's kind of saying goodbye to them, and he's, you know, picking who he wants. Who's going to watch over them? And he says to the guy, the kid he chooses, who's a, you know, slightly chubby African-American guy, kid. And he goes, you take care of anyone who is smaller than you. And I just, love that. It spoke to me in just that. That's kind of the way you should kind of live is, you know, you should be weary and be understanding and of those people who are, quote unquote, smaller than you. So, yeah.
I get that. I see how that's how that really is kind of, indicative of what we want in life.
Yeah.
Regardless of who the people are. I kind of felt that way as well. One of my probably all-time favorite memories is when he played Armand Goldman in The Birdcage, which is the owner of the drag club. Most people talk about the classic scene where they're trying to work on the new show number, and he does the whole, like,
Martha Graham.
Right. Nathan Lane is trying to, like, learn the number, and he's really irritated as the character of Albert with the young 20 something, you know, dancer who has a fucking amazing thighs. Well, he does. And he blows a bubble. And anyways, they're fighting and they're not getting along. And then he's trying to, like his, their son wants, Val wants him to come upstairs to explain something. And anyways, he does this whole open interpretive dance thing. Everyone talks about that. And it is, it's fucking funny as amazing, and people quote it all the time. But the part of the film that really touched me was later after that, basically, Albert leaves, like, he's disgusted and he runs away. And Armand finds him at a bus station, and he pulls up in their car, and he gets out and he sits next to him. And in the scene, they end up signing a palimony agreement. And the reason why it matters to me is because at that time when the film was made, we had less rights than we do now. And they had to, it represents the legality of how we were not considered equal for marriage and, like, estates and all that kind of stuff. So they basically sign over and make each other equally owned of each other's lives, basically. And it just really, it's so touching and moving because, like, Robin says, this whole speech about how Armand's running away to his, like, grave, which is in this shitty place called Las Copas, and he says, you know, I have a place in Key Biscayne, so I have to sell mine so I could be next to you. Why? Because I want to be with you, you know, for the rest of eternity, because you make me laugh. And that really hit me because I was like, wow, like, that's what I want in life. Like, I want a partner. Do you know what I mean? That not that a partner is willing to give up a great funeral plot. What I want is someone who's gonna, you know, who says to me, this is how much you matter to me. I will change this aspect of my life because I never want to be without you, even when we're gone. And that part I thought was just amazing. Like, it hits some major key points. It hits about the legality issue, it hits about love, and it hits about about dedication to your partner, so to speak. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of my favorite memory of the work that he did.
Yeah.
And that
he's a great man. And it will be, I will be sad that he is gone, but at the same time, it takes, oh gosh, I don't know how to say this without crying. It takes a lot to. It hopefully will. I hope that it opens doors and people start realizing how difficult this can be, how difficult depression can be for people, and how easy it is to go from to put that mask on every day, and how you may never know what someone is really feeling, and just realize that there are people out there that are suffering every day, and just try to keep yourself open to it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And that, all I can say here is goodbye, Robin Williams. We will miss you. Also, one thing I forgot. Upside, bright side of things, we will still be able to get some sort of interaction with him for 3 more movies. His latest was The Angriest Man in Brooklyn. Mm. He will also be in A Merry Freaking Christmas, which I'm assuming is going to be released around Christmas time. And also the third Night at the Museum movie, Secret of the Tomb. And last but not least, he does a voice in a movie called Absolutely Anything, which will be released in 2015. Mm. Thank you, IMDb. I'm going to have a look, a link in the show notes to everything you can... Everything you can pretty much find for Robin Williams on Amazon. So if you want to go see if there's a, either if you want to watch it by rental or if you want to watch or buy a DVD or something like that, you can just go to our website, click on that link, and you'll have a nice list already prepared for you. And with that, good night, Robin Williams. We will miss you.